Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and 3 o'clock is special guest time. And I am honoured to have three talented young men in the studio. a talented trio who are the Quality Street Band. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Lovely to see you all again. Guys were in here a couple of years ago. Now, let's get straight on to our chat. So you all bring your own expertise and music experience to the band. So let's have a look at you individually before we talk about you as a group. So perhaps you could shed some light. Let's start with David on, you know, a bit of background about your music influences and where you started playing, how long you've been playing, etc., etc.
Okay. Well, I started playing guitar, not bass, because I play bass now, obviously. That was back in 1980 with the ska band based in Coventry,
okay,
around that area. And that was quite successful. Did single and was signed to RCA Records.
Oh, you signed to a record company?
Yeah.
Wow.
At the time, yeah. But I wasn't a particularly good guitar player, a bit like was. So I ended up basically moving to Australia and starting to play the bass instead.
Yeah. Was there a demand for bass or...?
I just preferred the sound of it, and I figured I could do more. I felt I could do more on the bass than I could on a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of guitar players everywhere, and there weren't so many bass players. So
right.
I was quite influenced by Mark King from Level 42.
Yeah,
I liked that style of the slappy thing, and realised I had a certain knack and I could do it. So I kept getting jobs. People kept hiring me because I could do that.
Brilliant, yeah.
And then it just flowed from there. And obviously I played regular bass as well, not just the slappy style.
Yeah.
And a lot of people asked me to go and play with them, whether it was on an album track or a one-off gig, things like that. And so I just continued with that, and it just grew and grew. And then I was getting calls from Sony Music and people, or, you know, Julian Lennon's coming to town. Can you come and play bass with him?
So how was that, playing with Julian Lennon?
Slightly nerve-wracking because it was live TV.
Yeah.
And we had a 12 million audience that night. Well, that was over a couple of nights on the telly.
Yeah.
But, you know, a glass of vodka or two helped, as it always does in the green room.
And what was he like, though?
It's nice man. Yeah, very humble, very quiet. Obviously, he's got quite a history that he doesn't like talking about.
Oh, really?
No, because obviously him and his dad had a bit of a thing.
His dad left his mum when he was very
essentially
young.
Yeah. And almost, I wouldn't say neglected Julian, but he wasn't there for him.
Mm.
Although that changed over the years, and they did become close years later.
Good.
And Julian and Yoko actually get on as well now, which is nice, because there was a time when she just completely ignored him,
blanked him as well.
But that all changed as time went on. But that gig led to another gig, and whether it's David Gates from Bread, Canned Heat, I went on tour with, and various other people. And it just kept growing from that.
And so you moved from Australia and you went to the UK and you played with a band in the UK.
Yeah, I went back to the UK for a little while and played in a sort of funky, groovy R&B band around Leamington, Coventry area, and then a band in London. Mm. And then I came here. I came to Spain, basically, and that's where I met these gentlemen.
Yeah.
And the story continues from there.
So really, I mean, would you say that you've been playing, 40-odd years?
On the bass, 30, 35 years maybe, something like that.
Yeah,
probably about 1990 onwards.
So it's always been a real passion for you then, I would have said.
Music, absolutely, yeah.
Playing, performing.
Yeah. It's one thing I can actually do half decently as opposed to anything else. So I stuck with it and it seems to work.
Brilliant. So with Quality Street, you play bass.
I play bass, yes.
Right, okay. Now let's move on to Alan, our drummer in Quality Street.
Hello.
Hi, Alan. So I don't know as much about you as I do Dave.
Yeah.
So, and our audience obviously don't know a lot about you. So tell us about you, where you first started playing, when you started playing. Did you always play the drums? Was it something?
Not really. I started about 10, 12 years ago. So
okay.
Yeah.
Fairly new then.
Yeah, but my passion for music started when I was a teenager, and it was mostly thanks to Michael Jackson. And he was such a great influence, not only to me, but to a whole generation of young people. Mm. My passion for music, for singing, for dancing as well. I remember I used to dance in the middle of in school, in the class.
Really?
Yeah, I swear, yeah. And my friends would like sort of start chanting, come on, I'll give us a dance, you know? And then even the teacher would let me. I would get up.
Did you dance
and,
like Michael Jackson?
Nobody dances like Michael Jackson, but close enough. And well, you know, I have a shop in Campbellsall and I've been so busy all these years, but yeah. I found the time to like start developing mm-hmm. what I thought would be a passion, and I was not wrong, which is what drumming became.
Yeah.
I bought a electronic drum set and I started playing at home. I didn't know anything at all.
So did you teach yourself?
I taught myself. I did have a couple of lessons by a drummer who he's moved back to the UK now. His name is Tony Pickworth, and he was the drummer in the Geckos.
Uh-huh.
Such a lovely man. When he knew I sort of had interest, mm-hmm. he invited me to his studio, and he just said to me, let's see what you have. And I just played along, and he saw what I was doing wrong, corrected me, and said, take it on from here. And then it was his birthday, I don't know, about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and he was celebrating it at the Casa Club in Campbellsall. It was mm-hmm. called the Golf Club. And he invited me. He said, you have to come, and I'll let you play a song with my bandmates. Yeah.
So how did you feel when he said that?
I couldn't believe it. I was I was thrilled, excited, best feeling in my, really, yeah, best feeling in yeah, my life. Yeah. And we did, the song was Nadine. And I played it with Nick Bowers on guitar. He's back in the UK. And Gary, bless him, he passed away about a year ago. He was on bass.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. That's what started me up. And every single jam night, I would go and just play one song, two songs, whatever they let me.
Yeah.
And then there was a band called Jokers. They were looking for a drummer. Their drummer was a guy named Ray. And he left the band. They were looking for a drummer. They couldn't find anyone. So they would either choose me or nothing, you know. So I was so lucky. And I entered the band. We played for about a year. Gained lots of experience and, you know, about drumming and playing music and playing in a band. Then I joined the band Rufus y los Bandidos.
Oh, yes.
Steve Rufus. And
because they're still going, aren't
they? They actually had to stop about a year ago for health issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we created Quality Street, me, Waz, and Dave. And here we are, still doing it.
Absolutely. So you talk about your drumming, but you also sing, don't you?
Yes. I mean, again, going back to Michael Jackson, he's the one who started me up in this. I mean, my passion for I don't consider myself a singer. Not a good singer anyway. I mean, I can sing, but my voice is not, you know. But Waz on guitar, he always encouraged me, always gave me the push. He said, go on, you can do it. You can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he always encouraged me. And I consider that very valuable when you have encouragement from your bandmates.
Absolutely.
In this case, from him was the singing, from Dave was the playing, like do all the subtle stuff on the drumming and stuff.
Yeah.
And thanks to them, I've become better than what I was.
Mm.
You know, and as a musician, you always have to compare yourself with your own self, looking back, not with others. Never compare yourself with.
Progress.
That's right. Yeah. Never compare yourself with anyone else.
Mm.
Just see if you've progressed.
Mm.
If you're better tomorrow than you are today, and if you're better today than what you were yesterday, if that's the case, then you're doing a good job.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
So what went wrong there now?
So I want to know now, now that we know you're a bit of a dancer, when you play next, are we going to see you dancing?
Well, I mean, I can play drums and sing. I don't know if I can dance as well at the same time. I wouldn't be able to do all three.
The drums.
Yeah,
behind.
Let Wes play the drums.
He's dancing in his heart.
Yeah, that's playing. Right, yes. That's right.
Well, talking about me playing the drums, actually...
That this is Wes, by the way.
Yeah, Wes, the guitarist.
The guitarist. In the band, yes. And are you the lead vocalist, would you say?
We share it 50-50, yeah. Really. Yeah. Yeah, it started maybe as me being the lead, but then, as Alan was saying, he had to do more because he could do it.
Yeah.
So I pulled back a little bit.
Okay.
Concentrate
so
my playing.
To that. So
well, so yeah, talking about me playing the drums now for him to dance. My first passion, really, was the drums.
Really?
Not the guitar at all. I was brought up in Egypt.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking maybe 6, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And everywhere you go at those days, you can hear the Beatles songs. And there's posters everywhere.
In Egypt?
In Egypt, believe it or not. I don't know what happened to these countries, but then they used to be very westernized. Everywhere you go, there's a, you know, any club you go to, any place, you know, if you're going with my dad in the shops and whatever, there's big posters of Beatles and drums.
Yeah.
And we discovered then the BBC World Service.
Okay, yeah.
On the radio, and they used to play all that kind of stuff. And I was infatuated completely. Drums, that's all what I wanted to do. And I started teaching myself, playing on pots and pans and stuff like
really?
That. Yes, at the age
I
maybe.
Suppose if you want to do something, yeah, you'll yeah. find a way and you'll find
absolutely.
Something that gets...
And I actually end up, maybe by the age of 14, 15, 16, somewhere like that, I could actually play.
Okay.
And but then we moved back to Lebanon. And we decided to go for a band, me and my brothers.
Yeah.
I had an older brother and three younger ones. Two of them were studying music in music college.
Okay, so it's in your family, it's in your blood.
Yeah, it yeah. is. My father was singer-songwriter, really, in Egyptian, Lebanese style, you know, stuff. But, and we put a band together.
And that was in the Lebanon.
That was in Lebanon, just for a very short period before the, around the time when the Civil War started there. Okay. So we started traveling.
Yeah.
In Dubai, Abu Dhabi, places in the Gulf.
And playing. That was traveling and playing music.
Yeah, traveling to play music in first-class hotels, you know. Fantastic. Your Hilton, Sheraton, places like that. We had a good agency from Cyprus, who was really kept us going for about nearly 10 years.
Okay.
Not going back to Lebanon, and we haven't been back, honest. We moved on then from there, just playing music. And the guitar was my instrument. Then I sort of picked guitar and, again, self-taught. I wasn't taught, yes.
So you taught yourself the drums, and then you decided to...
Yeah, go for the guitar, you know, and obviously trying all the Jimi Hendrix tricks and stuff like that. Yeah, and... and yeah, and you know, done that till I got married and had children, and then I had to obviously put the guitar to one side to look after the family.
Yeah,
you know, pay the mortgage and all that.
So was that back in the UK?
That was back in the UK. Yes.
So then, obviously, or I'm presuming that you did start playing music again in the UK.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, I did all the. To start with, I did all the clubs and working man's clubs in the north of England. I was based in the north of England, in Leeds.
Yeah.
And I really, really learned the craft the hard way, doing the clubs.
Because they're merciless.
They are serious people.
If they don't like you, that's
you will know it. Yeah. You, oh, God, you'll empty the room in 2 minutes. Luckily, I didn't, Dave. I didn't.
This is why Wes had to actually leave England. Still looking for him.
I have a dim and distant memory of you talking about, was it Shirley Bassey?
Shirley Bassey, yeah. That
tell
was
us,
okay.
Tell us about this.
We were working Ramada Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And out of the blue, suddenly this big buzz in the hotel that wasn't advertised to us, the band, that Shirley Bassey is actually arriving on the weekend, on the Friday, whatever, and doing a concert in the Ramada, in the ground of the hotel. Yeah. And then obviously we had to, you know, the on the day of the concert was like major equipment, this, that, and the other, and all that. But then, to get all the customers in the hotel attention away from the sound check and all that, we had to actually put our gear ourselves out in the swimming pool and play 1.5 hour set. While they were actually preparing the other side.
So it's a distraction.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the other side of the ground.
Yeah.
They were building massive thing, you know, with all the steps down for the Goldfinger opening.
Incredible.
And all. Yeah. And yeah, we were lucky to watch her really live. She's amazing. And then all her musicians, the orchestra with her, then came to the nightclub where we are the regular nightclub, where the resident nightclub band in the Ramada. Yeah. And they were all sort of amazed how we all can play without sheet music. because we play, like me and Dave and Alan now, and most bands you see, we don't have sheet music if anything, maybe some lyrics to read, but not sheet music as such. But these people, and I had a lot of chats with them, with the drummer, with the guitarist from her band. He said, I have to have a sheet music, proper arrangement, otherwise I won't be able to play.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was really giving me a lot of credit for being able.
Yeah, I bet they were blown away by the fact that you
2.5 hours
just get out there,
playing jazz music, disco, you name it, all those days. And it was the 80s.
So what do you think? Because I find this quite curious, actually, that you've got they, obviously, super professional.
Oh my God, yes.
To be playing with someone like an artist like Shirley Bassey.
Absolutely.
And then you guys, okay, you're professional as well, but you wouldn't have been as well known. And why couldn't they play without the sheet music?
I think what happens is if you taught music in like college music
or
traditional way, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, and all this, but people, that's all what you know, really.
Okay.
You can't improvise, you can't just sort of use your ear as such. Maybe
you guys are eclectic and more kind of maverick.
Yes. Yeah. We just listen to, I put a record next to me, I listen to it.
Yeah.
And I'll just sort of start playing it naturally with the record, basically.
Yeah.
Teach myself how to play it.
Brilliant. So, let's move on now. So you all live in Spain.
Yes.
And how did you all meet and decide to start the Quality Street Band? I don't know.
All right. So it was... pretty much, I would say it was Waz's idea.
Oh, okay.
Because
were you friends, the three of you?
Yeah, we knew each other. In fact, we had played together with Rufus y los Bandidos for a short period of time. Especially when, for example, say the lead guitar player couldn't make it. Well, Steve Rufus would contact Waz. Or if the bass player couldn't make it, he would contact Dave. So we actually played a few times together.
Right.
Plus, we knew each other. We've always been, I would say, good friends, And it was Waz's idea because he hasn't mentioned it, but here in Spain, he was friends with a guy called Rob Burgess.
Oh, I know Rob. Yes.
Great guy who passed away.
Yeah.
And they had a duo, Waz and Rob.
Ah.
And Waz was doing lots of the stuff that he does now. Your Santana and your Pink Floyd and stuff like that.
Yeah, fantastic.
So he sort of missed it. Mm. And I was already playing in a band with Bandidos. Dave was playing with Glam Jam. And Waz's idea was for us to have a sort of a gig every month, once a month, twice a month. That was his idea. Just for the fun of it,
Yeah.
And we said, okay, let's try. And he showed me the repertoire, and I couldn't say no to it. Like, it was, I personally love Pink Floyd, Santana. Then, you know, on the second set, we do lots of dancing stuff, disco and rumba and stuff like that. So I would say all of the songs were actually, for me, they were, I couldn't say no
they
to them.
They were talking, they like, were singing to
Yeah, I couldn't say no to it, you know. And I mean, it was a yes from me. And Dave,
could you tell us how?
Yes, Dave.
I mean,
did Wes ask you or?
He said yes. I can't remember how the story was. Okay, if Wes says
quickly now. Yeah, yeah. Now there's a point where, prior to that, Dave and I, when Rob passed away, Dave and I were quite close. You know, Dave always used to come to our gigs, me and Rob, and I used to go and watch his gigs, and I think I liked what he does.
Yeah.
And I suppose you liked what I do, Dave.
That's what I tell you. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Rob passed away, me and Dave put together quickly, you know, within like a week, put together a similar kind of thing what we're doing now.
Wow.
Yeah, and we it worked. Me and Dave.
Yeah.
It did actually work. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we did. Two professionals together. Yeah,
bang! Straight away we clicked, and it worked nicely.
Yeah.
But then COVID hit. If you remember.
So put everything
absolutely off.
Yeah.
And it took a long time then for everything to happen again. Meanwhile, Dave obviously joined another band, and I end up being the sort of the call-on guy that if any guitarist ill or can't do a gig, people will ring me and say, can you come and help? Yeah, and this is how I met Alan.
Okay.
And and then, as Alan said, you know, so when I approached Alan about it, and Alan seemed to be very agreeable, it didn't take a lot of convincing to Dave, really. I just went, we had a coffee, and I said, look, blah, 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 blah. And he said, I'm in, no problem.
So, so David, if you can just tell us, because you were playing with Glam Jam for a long time. A
couple
then,
of years.
Yeah. And then, obviously, you started playing with Woz, and...
Yeah, well, I had a very similar thing. I was sort of depping, standing in for a few people if they didn't have a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Glam Jam was probably coming towards its end anyway at that point.
Yeah.
So the timing was actually quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And like Wes says, what we could do together seemed to click, and it just seemed to work. And not just in music, but, you know, we sort of think alike, I think, and we're very on the same page in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
And we all like the music.
Yeah.
That was
and
being
you all
suggested.
Get on.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, because there are so many bands that you hear about, you know, the infighting and egos.
Big egos and all that.
Yeah. And it seems to me like you three are just kind of regular guys who enjoy what you do and just want to get up there and do it.
It's something Dave said actually yesterday. I'm going to say it now. He said, this is more than a band. And that hit me, really. I went back home to my wife, to, you know, what Dave said. You know, it, more than a band means a lot, really. It means like we're
family.
Family.
Yeah,
you know,
your family, that's it.
Really close.
Really. So how long have you been Quality Street now?
It was, I think our first gig, it was the 30th of December, 2023. That's when we debuted. It was actually, funny enough, outside my shop. Between Tails and Cats, that was our first time we played there.
So that's 2 years, just
that's
over 2 years.
Yeah, two years and about 2 months.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of marked, how do you say it, like...
cemented
you. Yeah.
The three of you.
Yeah. It was sort of the awakening of something, you know. We had no idea that it would click and work so well.
Yeah.
Because I was busy with the Bandidos anyway. And my idea was, and always was until I left, that the Bandidos, Rufus y Los Bandidos, was my main band, my first band. This, it was initially, by all three, we said it would be like a secondary thing, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it just, everywhere we played, people seemed to enjoy it. People seemed to have fun, to dance, to come and say afterwards, you know, after the gig finished, great guitar playing, amazing bass. I mean, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And we were always returning to the same venue. And we couldn't stop playing. Yeah. I mean, people were calling us, people were messaging us, can you come and play? We're doing private events, we're doing so many things. And it just gave us the inspiration to do even more and to fill in the repertoire with different songs, different styles. There was no stopping.
So instead of being like your secondary band, it became like first place, really.
Yes, it became you know, like, it's what people demand at the end of the day.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've been playing now as a band for just over 2 years. What going forward, what are your aims? What are your thoughts and desires?
Okay, fair enough. Well, one thing happened out of the experience we've had for the last couple of years is it wasn't really intentional, but it was this thing about Carlos Santana. Carlos Santana, you do very well, Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
Carlos Santana. Yeah. We love Carlos Santana.
Do,
well, fair enough. So without actually any design, we the more songs we learned, we end up now with about an hour, over an hour of pure Carlos Santana material, which is obviously you don't need to be a scientist to think, well, we can do actually Santana tribute. We experimented with that in the what do you call it,
festival in La Salle.
In La Salle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He booked us for 1 hour, so we thought we'll just go as a Carlos Santana show.
Okay.
And it was complete, you know, we brought the place down. Seriously.
We don't usually do all the songs. We don't usually do all the Carlos Santana songs in our gigs. Like, we normally pick up three, four.
Yeah.
And if we return to the same place, we do another three, four. And so, obviously, we play with the repertoire, so you don't repeat yourself. But we have enough material from Santana to do a tribute.
So do you think now, I don't know how new this is, that you will probably, you'll play as Quality Street doing your eclectic mix?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there'll be, like, if there's a demand just for Santana. Yes.
Absolutely, we are available.
Then you'll just do Santana.
Yes, and that's was fun. It was, what do you think, Dave?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing that we can actually do that.
Mm.
And we've got enough material to do that. And there's no reason we can't. If people wanted to book the band just as a Santana tribute type thing, we could pull that off.
Yeah.
Will you use that? Will you kind of advertise that as something more that you do? Or is it just you waiting?
We will, we will. And especially, probably not in this area, especially outside this area where, you know, where people haven't seen us as much. The thing is, we're so busy here that we haven't thought of traveling.
Okay.
You know, because we, you know, you finish a gig after midnight, you still have to pack up. It takes me to set up 3 hours. I'm there. It doesn't take me 3 hours. What I mean is, like, I'm there 3 hours before setting up, making sure everything is set up for the boys to then come in and set up their own gear around the drum kit. Our gigs take about close to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Close to 3 hours. You finish, you still have to pack up. It takes me another hour, hour and a half. So imagine if I'm in Torrevieja.
Yeah.
I would still have another hour and a little too. So we didn't think of playing in those areas.
Sure.
But with the Santana tribute, it would probably work well.
If you're only going outside to do an hour, is that what you're saying?
Well, we would do an hour of Santana, an hour and a little, actually.
Yeah, over an hour.
And then the second set would be a mix of party songs.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what most tribute bands do these days. Because you don't want 3 hours of the same.
Exactly.
A first set is fine.
Yeah.
A whole set of a particular artist, in this way, in this case, is Santana. Then second set would be all party songs, music to dance.
Your Gypsy King, your disco, calling the gang and stuff
fantastic.
Like that.
That's, you get
you get people dancing and all that.
And you're kind of, my words are going, you're kind of mixing for everyone.
That's right.
You're playing for everyone.
We found out, at least in our gigs, first set, most of the times people are sort of sitting down, looking at the band, having a drink. By the second set, people have had a couple of drinks, three, you know, they're feeling happy. You know,
they want to get
so
up.
They're ready to dance. Yeah. We found that formula it works fine 95% of the times.
Yeah.
And
plus the fact that there's a point. I mean, I think that, you know, that the demography in the Motherland itself has changed. As in, I'm noticing there's a lot of Germans, a lot of Belgian, French, Dutch. Far more Dutch. Than I've been here 11 years, Dutch and all that. So what we're doing, we're trying to cater to these people as well.
Yeah.
While maybe 10 years ago, if you put a band together, you would be aiming at expatriates. Yeah, yeah, and you know very well, you start from 60s music, you know, Everly Brothers, this,
absolutely.
That, and the other. Yeah.
So now you've got to be a bit more universal, absolutely. a bit more of the world.
Yes,
so
exactly.
The music of the world.
That's the point.
That's good in a way as well, because it means it opens up our repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we can look at doing songs that perhaps you wouldn't have normally thought of doing,
yes.
because there are a wider range of ears listening.
Brilliant.
Who know more music than you know some others, perhaps. So,
Okay, well, brilliant, guys. You would not believe, but we've run out of time.
Oh, God.
Now, if anyone would like to contact you for a gig or, you know, private or in a bar or a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
How can they? Or a Santana trip.
You just leave a big bag of money up at Alan's shop on Camposol.
Well, you can meet me in person, and those who know me, and in Alan's shop on Camposol A Sector. You can contact me through Facebook on my personal Facebook page, which is Alan Babana.
How do you spell that surname?
Okay, Alan is A-L-E-N.
Yeah.
Babana is B-A-B-A-N-A.
Right.
That's my personal Facebook. Or you can just go to the actual band's pages, which is the Quality Street Band, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And should I give my telephone as well?
If you want
to write down my telephone, it's 699-658-660.
Fantastic.
For WhatsApp or calling me.
Yep, brilliant. Yeah. And just before you go, I want to hear a funny story.
Funny story? Well, there's funny stories every time we play, we get together, especially when I drop the stick when I'm drumming. Dave notices instantly and he'll always, you know, give me the smile. That's always funny. But I would say, if you've seen us, you know we do a song called Leave Your Hat On, which is towards the end of the night.
From the Full Monty.
That's the one. And Wes always comes with a couple of hats for the audience to volunteer. So people usually volunteer and not knowing. Those who haven't seen us don't know what's coming. So we always say that's two magic hats, wear them and follow the instructions of the song until that, you know, it comes in and then people go crazy. So usually you have the couple that's with the hats doing the dance, okay? That's what usually happens.
Yeah.
I remember one time, and usually when I'm playing it, I don't look, because if I look, I may lose time, you know, lose timing or make a mistake. So I don't usually look when people are dancing, because normally you concentrate on what they're doing and you forget what you're doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do like really funny moves.
Yeah.
So I don't. Anyway, one night, I think we were in Condado, as the song went, I was playing thinking that the couple with the hats was doing the dancing. When I looked up, you had the whole house, everybody. There was a lady who had got up the table and she was in her bra. And I was like, how did it get to this point?
Yeah.
Everybody. And I think that was so funny.
And good humor.
I mean, it's because we do it for the fun of it.
Yeah.
We do it for the comedy. We do it for the, you know, it was, yeah. And I said, oh my God, what have we done? I mean,
but that's fantastic because it's synonymous now with you guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyone who comes regularly will know.
As soon as we say
it's
the time of the night and the hats, you see people running away. You know these people, they've seen us before.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'd like to thank all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
And I'm going to finish this section off. You know what I'm going to play, don't you? Tom Jones, you can leave your hat on. And yes. Then straight after that, I'm going to play Black Magic Woman Santana.
Okay, lovely. Nice one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.